This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Oh, no.
Just do a full siren. Do a full siren. Lowest look. One of those.
Yeah.
Hello, halflings! It's me!
Yes!
But you could call me Liv, and I am joined today by...
Yes! Jeremy Cobb. And I don't even have the nicknames up. That's how excited I was. But Andrew Searles and Morgan Buck call me Jeremy Roll 20 Cobb.
They do call you that, yeah.
People started giving me branded nicknames.
You opened yourself up to it, honestly. Like, it's a smart, savvy business move, and I'm so for it.
It's true. Yeah. In future, if you PayPal me a single dollar, as long as I'm okay with your company, I will give you, only for a guest on the show, though. Don't just randomly.
Okay. I mean,
please do not randomly do that.
100 people do it. That's $100, Jeremy. I'm saying.
What are you going to say to free money, you know?
Well, I mean, what are you going to...
That's true, I guess.
I guess you kind of sell your soul a little bit, but, you know, still.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about farming our audience for $1 for nicknames.
Look, no one has to do this, but if you so wish, I mean, honestly, this isn't my thing, and Jeremy's told you not to, but it would be funny, but also don't do it. Mostly.
You should send him to Liv instead.
No, don't do it. That's nothing to do with me. This is Jeremy's thing.
Don't tweet at me right now.
Do not at me. Yeah. Do not. Please and thank you.
But we're not the only ones here, as you can tell. Yes. It is not just Liv and I. Today, we are joined by an incredible guest. You may know them from Twitter. You may know them from your wildest dreams. The DM for Strix U. You may also know them as that. This is Lexi, also known as Black Girl Mage.
Lexi! I'm so excited. I'm refreshed. I battled dragons before I got here, and now, you know,
it's so impressive.
It's a new year, new me, you know? Mm-hmm. I fought so many dragons that a year has passed. My year starts today.
Oh my goodness. May I ask, did you slay the dragons?
No, we just debated hotly for about, like,
I see.
3 millennia.
Oh my goodness.
Wow, so were you, like, trapped in another space, another like era, another like
was another
pocket
realm.
Dimension.
Yeah, it was a pocket dimension. Yeah. I accidentally, what happened was that I got up in the middle of the night, I ran to the bathroom, and when I went to open the bathroom door, it's just purple, blue sky, stars around me, and these dragons
like
were yelling.
Abyss.
And I was it's too late for you all to be yelling like this. And got through all of their stuff, you know, in my downtime.
Yeah. Honestly, it's rude. Like, were they keeping you awake, I assume?
They were. Yeah. They were so loud. Yeah.
Did you get to go to the bathroom?
No.
Oh, no!
Actually, I'll be right back.
Millennia. I have to go.
Oh, no! Yes. Go piss.
All right, now you're back.
Go piss, girl.
Quick piss. That's an incredibly quick piss. It's like a bucket.
You just
and just run back.
Always ready to go.
No piss, new me. Just like
no piss, new year. This is a no piss, new year. Right?
Yes,
now.
No piss, new year.
No piss, November.
No piss, November.
legally,
it's not November. Yeah, do not do this. It's not November. Number one. Number two. Do not do that.
You guys do no piss this year?
What? Somebody's just sat there like, yes, I'm still doing.
Just veins standing out.
It's May, Jim. Yeah. What are you talking about?
Gotta start training now. Gotta start stretching the bladder to get it to the right size in time. No piss November is a full year commitment.
That fears me. It gives me fear.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
I can't laugh too much or I'll mess up my training.
Otherwise, you'll piss. Can't do it, Jeremy.
No.
The amount of things you have to turn down. Like, you can't go to any open mics. You can't go to anybody's, like, comedy shows. You can't, like, you can't watch
do panels anymore.
Yeah, you have to log off Twitter. Like, you can't.
Yeah. It's not allowed.
Jeez.
No. Gang, what are we doing?
That's true. We are doing
a cool interview. Just pissing. Yeah, true. Lexi. Just pissing.
Lexi.
This is a solid 60 minutes of listening to just a quiet whiz.
Oh, there I go. You said it. There I go. Sorry. That was my trigger word.
I'm so sorry.
I probably should have picked a better one. Not to piss. And just.
Oh no, Jeremy! No.
First of all, thank you so much for coming to our show.
Yes,
of course. I've been such a long time listener and a long time lover of this show. Every single step of the way. It's life changing.
Thank you.
This is so nice. Like, I literally have this conversation with somebody, like, I do not know how to, like, accept, like, any kind of compliment. And so I will, and I'm not going to make the noise, but usually I do make a vomit noise. And I'm not going to do it, but it is a problem. But also, thank you so much. That's really kind of you.
There you go. You did it.
You
did it.
I know. Thank you.
Oh, it's a skill. It's a special skill to be like, yes, really thank you so much for.
Thank you so much. I deserve these accolades. Thank you.
Exactly.
Of course.
Couldn't be me.
Just, of course.
Jeremy's like, I don't have that problem.
Yeah.
I just walk down the street and I say, you're welcome to people as I walk along.
What did you do? Just looking back, you're like, what did you do?
I just throw open shop doors and shout, you're welcome, and then leave.
Just run away.
So intimidating.
Yeah, I just, like, just sprint away as fast as possible. Lexi, I wanted to ask you, because you are, in fact, not just a black girl mage. You are also a nerd.
Above all else.
Yes. Lexi, can you please tell us, what is your nerdy origin story?
Once upon a time, there was a man and a woman. And they loved each other so much that they had multiple children. But when they had me, they realized another girl and they cried because my dad wanted another child to share Batman and Lord of the Rings. And my mom wanted a boy to share Aliens and Lord of the Rings also with. And then I grew.
Yes. Then I emerged.
I emerged victorious. Yes. The nerdiest out of all of my family members. I grew up with, like I said, my mom and my dad, they're both huge nerds. My mom went to school for journalism. She was a writer. She was a poet. She was just like one of those weird people that could like twist sentimentality while writing about aliens and writing about the paranormal.
A skill.
I have no idea how she did it. My dad was just like, he did everything. Like, he was a firefighter, he was a DJ, like he was like a community organizer, like all of these things. But he loved like Batman, Superman, anything DC, anything superhero wise. And as I got older, I just kind of absorbed that from them. Yeah, I had a particularly like religious, strict childhood. But
also what, really into nerd stuff and horror.
Yeah.
What a combo.
A juxtaposition.
When I say you have to be so creative, you have to find the cool, like there was this one series that no one ever remembers, but it was called like Angel Wars Guardian Force. And it was like this freaky Christian show about like this two angels who are like flunking out of angel school. Like they're not good at being angels. Whoa, and they're led
by an angel academy.
Yes, led by the angel Michael or something.
Okay.
They go out on missions and they have these like mechanical wings that they use, and they go up against these huge monsters that are supposed to be the embodiments of like fear and like anger and all of these things. And it was like a 3D like masterpiece. Like it's actually really bad, but like
I'm looking at images of this, and for some reason like my brain is like have I seen this?
Yeah,
have I actually seen this though? Maybe. Oh,
it's
no,
wild. But like things like that, it's like you watch those things and you have to extract the coolness from them when you want to seem to your friends that like you want to seem like you've seen The Matrix or Harry Potter or like, any of those things.
Did you ever watch Bible Man?
Yes. Yep. Cypher is my boy.
Cypher is my Bible boy.
Man. I always missed Coates though. I did like Coates.
Yeah. It's all of these shows were created to mitigate children.
No.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh no. Once again, looking it up. Oh dear.
I need to do a quick plug
because I did an entire episode discussing Bible Man with on the podcast Cult Classic Callback. They had never seen Bible Man, but they had heard of it. And let me tell you, folks, it does not hold up.
It does not hold up at all. Cypher is cool. Like the blade. Like I don't even know what they're called. I've been looking up, like trying to figure
they're
out
like
what
rings.
They're called. They're like rings. Oh, gosh. Mm-hmm. The work that was done on
also,
that show.
Like, If you're not familiar with Bible Man, imagine basically a Christian superhero wearing armor that approximates Batman's armor from specifically Batman and Robin era, where it's like really like very solid, like hard plastic, sculpted torso
abs
with bright
pecs.
Color. Yeah, abs, pecs, all of that. Yeah. And also a cape and a lightsaber.
Yes. And it's like,
so wild.
Batman gets to be like epic. Like he at least, it's like when the city's in danger, it's like a population that is in danger. So you feel a little bit of danger. This guy just shows up to Sunday school because the kids at Sunday school are like, should I steal from my parents? And he's like, yes. He like runs across
the
city.
A singular child is having a problem. And Bible Man shows up.
To stop them.
Like, but he has his own like Bible cave type thing. I don't remember what it's called, but he has like a headquarters with a computer.
What's his kryptonite? Is it just, I mean, hell? Is it hell, the concept?
It has to be hell, the concept.
Yeah. Okay.
Because he basically also struggles with things himself too, and it doesn't hold up now because you're just like, oh, so you're just a person.
It's not,
so relatable. He's an everyman. Yeah. Oh my god.
All the bad guys are just embodiments of things that plague humans. Mm-hmm. So like the first one I ever saw was the Shadow of Doubt. That's the guy's name. That's the super, all those, also most of the supervillains are played by the same guy.
Yes.
But
it's consistent work, you know? Like,
yeah. But they basically, Bible Man's weakness is that they cause him to succumb to whatever they represent. So Bible Man starts to doubt himself or starts to doubt his faith, or maybe he gets irrationally angry or like he gets depressed or anything.
There wasn't like a lust episode. I hope that's not the case.
Remember, they did they played like lusty music for all of the sins, like when the sins would walk. Like I remember a specific like one movie where the music was like, oh, do you remember the movie where they had the a full-blown music video in the middle of the movie?
Yes. We reviewed that on one of the, I think that was one of the episodes we reviewed on Call Classic.
Oh my goodness.
They just use music to signify evil or like a very strong song to signify Bible Man is here and coming. But
yeah,
it was just, it's like stuff like that. That like, okay, everyone else got Harry Potter and then we had VeggieTales and Bible Man. Like it's.
Oh, I had to ask you, Lexi.
Yeah.
Wait, you mentioned you liked fantasy and horror. Did you ever read Frank Peretti's books?
No.
You didn't? Because when you start talking about angels, I thought you were about to go, oh my goodness. Okay, I don't know if these hold up, but at the time I read them, they seemed really good.
Yeah.
I recommend if you are a Christian or have in the past enjoyed Christian literature and are open to reading it now, I suggest the books This Present Darkness and Piercing the Darkness. Not necessarily for the theological content, but the angel basically lore. They are about angels.
Yeah.
They are about, okay. The idea is it's like there's a town that is being invaded by demons, and then a group of angels have to show up to fight the demons, but they're all invisible to the people. So like the battleground is basically like a spiritual battleground that's taking place around all of these human characters. And like the human characters, like there's like parts where like demons will jump onto people and they won't necessarily possess them, but they will start to like influence them. So they'll like stick their claws
like
into people's minds.
I was gonna say,
yeah. And wow, like the demons are like grotesque and like disturbing and scary. They have like these giant like bat like they're like weird bat things with huge like yellow eyes bulging out of their heads, and like it's gross. And then the angels look like just dudes.
If you like that dudes. Kind of stuff, have you seen Warrior Nun on Netflix?
Warrior Nun.
But I've heard such
Warrior
good things.
Nun. It's
I've heard such good things. Mostly gay things.
Very gay
but
things.
Yes, very good.
But it's like
none of the things we've mentioned are gay up until now.
Yes, sadly. But the so true. It talks about like the idea. It's not even commending Christianity or any sort of religion, but it's like the idea that there's this magical artifact called a halo that gives power to a chosen one called the Warrior Nun throughout the ages, starting from Joan of Arc.
Whoa.
And
fun.
It goes into their back and gives them the ability to fly. They remain immortal. Yes. They can't like die, and they can like, they get super strength and like battle awareness and stuff like that.
Oh my God.
And so it's literally about like this person that comes to the earth and everyone's like, oh, it has to be an angel because he's performing miracles. Mm-hmm. But they're like mixing this like biblical definition of what people call angels with a literal definition of a demon with technology and like Elon Musk-y levels of like controlling the world and automation. And it comes together. It's like such a beautiful, it like makes me go, okay, the angels kind of pop off though. Like,
yeah.
Not exactly in that ballpark anymore, but angels pop off. Mm-hmm. They go hard.
I mean, because I was going to ask, Jeremy, when you say like Christian literature, would it count as the YA novels I read when I was a tween that were just like, this sexy angel comes along and he loves you and you've lived 1,200 lives and, like, and he saves you every time. Like that kind of...
Yeah. Christian fanfic does count.
Maybe. Yeah, could be.
No, fanfiction is real. You, gang, it's real.
It's have y'all seen, it's just have y'all seen Angels in America, the play?
No. Wait, I really want to.
Because what you just described, there's a character in that who's closeted, but religious.
Uh-huh.
And he talks about what appears to, he doesn't refer to it this way, but it's clearly like a sexual awakening for him, that he saw a painting of Jacob wrestling with the angel of the Lord in Genesis. And that, which is a wild fight in and of itself.
Yes.
So mud wrestling angels. Is this what we're?
Yeah, he's in the middle of the night.
Okay.
A dude shows up. Jacob starts wrestling with him. Just out of nowhere, they start wrestling, and then the angel's like, "Let me go. It's about to be morning. I gotta go." And Jacob's like, "I won't let you go unless you bless me." And the angel pops his hip out of place. Like the angel responds by dislocating Jacob's hip, and Jacob's still
good
like,
"For you, angel."
Yeah, and Jacob's still like, "No, I won't let you go unless you bless me." And the angel's like, "Ugh, fine. Here's your blessing."
No, what's Jacob going to do now that his hip is popped out? I don't understand.
He limps. Like,
I wasn't really focused on the hip. I kind of stopped listening when you talked about the hip because this is very sexy.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very sexy idea of like, oh, we're wrestling till morning.
And yeah, I know. Like,
well, that's
like,
let
me
go. In the play.
No.
Yeah, in the play, it's like the wrestling with the angel, I think, is not only is does the character find the angel super sexy, but also the wrestling with the angel symbolizes his wrestling with his own sexuality because he grows up in a very homophobic environment.
Oh, so
which,
you're
by the way,
telling me you laid a trap. Of, oh, this is for gay people only. You laid a trap and I walked directly in it. I walked in and said,
sorry.
Oh, it's kind of sexy.
Well, you're like, you should watch Angels in America. It's really good. It's incredibly gay.
Yeah,
the full title is Angels in America, a gay fantasia on national themes. It's such a gay play. It's awesome.
Oh,
it's really good.
I love
it's technically two plays. It's like 7 hours of gay. It's awesome.
Oh, wow. That's more than Netflix
like
will give us, so.
It's so true. Oh, and then it cancels it straight away. Yeah. Lex, don't even get me fucking started. sorry, you were telling us about your origin story. Sorry, yeah. Lex. And then we started talking about angels for a solid 10 minutes.
Circling back to Bible Man.
Yes.
No, like I had to mix so much of what I didn't have. And so I turned to writing. Me and my brother turned to writing. Like every summer, we would plan all the school year about like characters and stuff like that. And because we had limited computer time, as I should have. And then.
As I wish I had now.
No, I cannot set that limit on myself now, but I wish I had it. Mm-hmm. We would sit down every summer and write for hours and hours and hours and hours on end. Like this book of like fantasy. It was like a urban fantasy book about like kids who like realized their parents could all manipulate time. And like it was self-inserts through the roof. Like,
oh gosh. Yeah.
And like really bad. Like we had a character named Silver and then my brother's character self-insert character was Gray. Like I was like, why did we do this? It's because Sonic exists and my brother wanted to have
As soon as you said Silver, I was like the hedgehog. Yeah.
Yes, exactly like the hedgehog. Exactly like
Very
the hedgehog.
Nice.
So it was like nice. We wrote that stuff and then as we got older, like started reading my dad's comics, started actually going out and buying comics ourselves. And I was an avid reader, like would just read through everything I possibly could. And we used to have like ratings in high school, in grade school into high school, where it was like a lexicon or something. Like what grade do you read at? And so you would read books, get points to go to the book fair and spend them later. And I was just like maxed out.
Oh, yeah.
Fully maxed out. Like couldn't read. Like,
maxed out book fair life.
Exactly. Yeah. The only thing I couldn't that read was Harry Potter. Yeah. Yeah. Was that you? Yeah.
I feel like it was. Yeah. Even though it was the UK, like, yeah, that's very familiar. Yeah.
Was yours Scholastic? Because was it always the Scholastic book fair? Yeah.
Nice. That's good to know. Yeah. That's good to know.
And all the books were too expensive, so I couldn't fucking buy anything. Yeah.
So expensive. They were so expensive for no reason. Like, Scholastic was like, we're here to bring you books. We're not here to make them accessible to you as children.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, you've come to my school. This isn't like a private school. Scholastic.
Exactly. They're like hoping you run home in tears, like, please let me get Diary of a Wimpy Kid tomorrow. Please.
Mother, I want to buy Thunderpants or whatever it's called.
Oh,
Captain Underpants.
Underpants is so good. Also written by an Ohioan. Dad Pilkey is Ohioan.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Ohio.
The legacy of Ohio.
Wow. Yeah.
Captain Underpants.
That's how we describe it.
Did you ever read
it,
Super Diaper Baby?
Yes.
Yeah. Liv, you seem to
be
super
that
diaper
was very,
baby.
No, it was very guttural for me. I was like, yes. Instinctual.
Yes. Yes, I've read Super Diaper
so
Baby.
So fast.
It's a spinoff of Captain Underpants.
So what is it called? Super what?
Super Diaper Baby. It's like, super I think it's written by Dan and Harold. I think those are the names, the protagonists.
Yes.
I think it's written by them.
Yes. It's interesting because like there's just been like a sprawl of books in that same exact style. And I don't know if it's actually still written by like, is it Dave or Dav? Dave?
I think it's, well, spelled Dav.
It's spelled
but I don't
Dav.
Know if it's pronounced Dav.
It might be Dave. Dave Pilkey is his name.
Yeah.
But like, it's interesting to walk around and see that. My niece, she's like 9 and I've been getting her into like, she loves reading graphic novels and like things that have pictures with it. And she found some of my old Captain Underpants books and loved like the flippograms in them. Like they're the flipperamas, that's what it's called. But she hates the newer books. Like whatever, there's something about these newer books that she's like, they don't have it. And I'm like,
they've lost their sparkle.
You're right. Yeah. But yeah, the like list just, oh yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's like when Percy Pig stopped using pork gelatin. But that's, I think that's a reference only Liv would get.
Sorry.
It's an M&S. Yeah. No, it's a UK thing. Like, full, big, full, yeah.
Yeah.
The M&S.
Basically,
nonsense.
If you ever go to England, I'll go to Hagrid. Liv, you got this.
I was just going to say, it's a little candy. It's like a little sweet, and it's just like a pig, and it's pink, and they come in these little bags, as you would imagine. And they're available in M&S, and there's sometimes, like you've got also got like Lidl and Aldi over in the UK that like do a lot of knockoff stuff.
Yeah.
Like they'll take things that are like, you know, in the posh shops quotation marks and then we'll like, you know, sell them for cheaper basically, and yeah, delicious, very good. Ooh. very nice. Yeah. Very nice stuff. Yeah.
So what's this about pork jelly? Pork what?
Right. So they, in Percy Pigs, they used to use pork gelatin because they're gummy candies. Mm-hmm. They're not just like any old candies.
Oh,
they're not hard candies. They're gummy.
Mm-hmm.
So they used pork gelatin. And back when they did that is when I discovered them, when I was like 6 years old, because I used to go to England all the time. Mm-hmm. And my classmates used to literally give us money to bring them back because these things were so like they were really good. Like really, really good. Like really, really good.
Oh
and
my
people,
God.
Like, people do rave about them.
Yeah.
But I've never, throughout my childhood, I just never enjoyed like sweet things. Mm. So like, I was just like, oh yeah, take it or leave it. Yeah, cool. But people love them.
Yeah. They were the only candy I would eat because I didn't like sweet things either.
Yeah,
they were the only candy I would eat. And eventually, like a few years ago, they switched from pork gelatin to, I think, vegetable gelatin or something like that.
Okay.
Like a more, like basically they're making it. Yeah. So a good moral change, but flavor wise, I feel a slight downgrade. It just hasn't been the same. Mm-hmm.
A shame.
That's so rough because you would think like, can you like just test it more to make sure it's closer to what people already know? Because like, I was literally just talking about this with my niece because she had a bag of Skittles. She was like, "Do you want some Skittles?" And I was like, "I don't eat Skittles because
they betrayed me
and they switched the lime green Skittle to the green apple green Skittle and it's back to lime now and I didn't realize that, but it was a very seamless transition because it's all green and nobody else when I spoke to them they didn't really care they didn't really notice and then I blatantly like noticed and like tweeted at them in my baby Twitter days and they were like we'll bring it back someday like who knows and I was like oh my god a company spoke to me but I was like, I'll hold out for you, lime green Skittle. And now it's back. Like, that's...
You did that.
Yeah, it's...
You may change.
It was me.
You did that.
I walked so the lime green Skittle could run in 2023.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you so much, Lexi.
Of course.
It means a
You're
lot.
You're welcome.
So after... Yeah, after...
After lime green Skittles.
Scholastic Book Fair. Yeah, back to
Book Fair.
Back to the whole interview thing.
We get older and everything is superheroes nonstop. It's all superheroes. Mm-hmm. It's as much superhero content as we can take in, whether that's comics. Like I started off with reading the Runaways and couldn't read them in order because I was borrowing them from the library, but I didn't realize it was in order. So I'm just reading. And as we get older, start reading more chapter books, start reading more comics, step away from comics a little bit because I was like, oh, there's an order to these? Whoa. and it was like, I'm disinterested now that I have to buy them in a specific order. the literal stopping point is like, oh, there's a book
sequential
one?
Story.
Yeah. exactly. But I love just like seeing heroes in their environment and watching them like, have like you could literally have little mini arcs and they would make references to other things but I was like oh this is normal I'm sure they just say this to let you know something else happened another time and then you can get back to the story it's perfectly fine and kind of branch from comics into manga into anime into fantasy into horror into cinematography into like it just got bigger and bigger and like started becoming a musical theater nerd and a music nerd and it was just like literally it took me getting to junior year of high school that's when the Beyonce self-titled album dropped changed my life turning point of everything where I was like oh I've got to sneak and listen to everything and I just started like made a Tumblr that year
that's the hallmark of a nerd right there
took
that's it
everything all at once all of my fandoms all at once and just became a fandom person nonstop like for every single thing comics movies TV shows music musical theater all of that stuff and it's
always so exciting to like hear somebody who also went down that dark path, you know, like the fandom path is all
we chose this. We chose it.
It built us up to who we are now.
Exactly.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
I've always been scared of the fandom.
As you should be.
Yeah. Yes. I have found that almost. Yeah. Every time I've really started to engage with a fandom, almost not every time. The one time that it didn't, I think, was with tennis. Because tennis, the tennis fandom, at least on the tennis fandom that I have observed on Reddit, just seems nice. Half the time they're just making memes about how they wish Federer and Nadal would get together and how they wish they were like more friends and stuff. And I'm like,
shipping.
I love that. Because there's all these cute, like, I don't know what it is. It feels so wholesome. There's all these cute photos of them just like sitting together with their arms around each other. That you see when, like, I think it was when Federer was going to retire. He's sitting next to Nadal and they're holding hands and like they both are like crying. And it's like, this is the sweetest thing. That's, yeah. Every other fandom, though, that I have observed has made me like the thing that I enjoyed less.
I feel like fandom has not only, it has definitely taught me that the internet is exactly what you make it. There are dark corners of the internet that I never have to go to because I don't want to. It has taught me the importance of like using a block button or being like almost every single social network has the ability to like expand the options on something you're seeing and say, I don't want to see something like this ever again. You can exercise that. But also like, I think the difference, because I wasn't a Reddit kid, I was a Tumblr kid, and on Tumblr, I think Tumblr is the last place on earth anyone's doing anything earnestly. Like, just because I enjoy this. Like, I'm drawing art because I enjoy this movie, or I'm writing up a whole script, or analyzing fanfic, and, like, doing all this stuff just because I enjoy, or knitting, or any sort of craft or hobby you could come to. Everywhere else, on Instagram, you're at the mercy of likes and you're at the mercy of the algorithm. Tumblr is such a dark corner that you're like, this is my little box. If anyone comes in it, thank you. But like, you don't have to let me know you were here. Like, fame doesn't exist on Tumblr. So
yeah, like there's even like a whole subgenre of like Tumblr famous, which is like, you're not Tumblr. You will be forgotten in mere minutes, but for a time, you're a hit. Yes. It's a whole. It's so
you got like 1,000 reblogs on one particular post you made, and then nothing ever again.
Nothing else.
Yeah. And it Tumblr does definitely.
Oh no, I was just gonna say Tumblr seems like sort of a bleeding heart. If I was to imagine that, like, because it's very strongly felt. Everything there seems like the stakes are very personal and very high.
Oh yeah.
But also like very precious, and like I kind of came towards it from the outside, and that's just kind of what I've observed from it. It seems like it was a really good place for a lot of marginalized communities to grow, in part because of that. In contrast to something like Reddit, which is a lot more cynical and weirdly well, I don't know if it's that much more depraved. It's depraved in different ways.
In a different way.
It's depraved in different ways. But yeah, there seems to be a lot less ironic distance or cynicism, in at least in the, like, the golden era of Tumblr.
Yeah. It's definitely like full involvement. Like, Tumblr encourages you to go in like fully with your chest and just like say it as loud and as proudly as you can because someone will like it. And I think that that's like definitely the energy that brought me to like when I did find storytelling, when I did find, because I got into like, after I was writing with my brother a lot, it turned into script writing, and I just started reading a bunch of scripts and found a community that was like on Tumblr that were like, hey, anyone want to read this? And you would just read through stuff. And even if it was bad, it's like, no, here's something that I love. Rather than on Reddit, I'm on like, there's R screenwriting, like I'm on that like Reddit section. I don't know what it's called, like a thread. I don't know if it's the whole thing's called a thread.
A subreddit.
Yes, I'm on that subreddit. And a lot of it is like people wanting to see the good, but mainly being there to point out the bad. And it's a very inverse thing. Where I'm not saying like Tumblr is good at all, but I think it's something that definitely molded me into the type of nerd where like, if I like something, I go all in with it and just like try to figure out how can I fully involve myself in liking this thing.
So how did that lead you then? Because we've gotten as far as screenwriting, which by the way, I need to very quickly ask you, have you read Berserk? I've become an apostle of, well, now that's the wrong word to use in the context.
Okay, every single time I've seen this book, I've seen this book in an airport. I've seen this book, like, you're talking about, like, the manga, right?
Yeah,
like, the manga. Really thick one, yes. I keep seeing it in random places, and it's, like, projecting itself.
It's following
it's
you.
Saying, you need to read this. And every single time I've bought it, I've been like, maybe not. Maybe I shouldn't.
Yeah.
But I need to. I need to so badly.
Yeah. It's I will say this. It is not for the faint of heart, because it goes there, and then sometimes it goes too far there. But the overall storytelling, the art, the characters, all that stuff is extremely good. Like, I really, if you are not, like, I mean, if you are into horror and you, and like really hardcore stuff does not bother you, or at least, or you can at least muscle your way past it, I think it's an extremely rewarding read. Like, any of the violence, brutality, all that, I think ends up being secondary to like the emotions of the story.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Also a little bit gay. In fact, the one of the central relationships, very gay.
Truly.
It's always good. It's always good to know.
Serving the people.
Yeah. Not healthy, though. Not healthy gay. Bad, bad gay.
Oh,
it's
not
a good gay.
Oh, no.
Bad gay. A naughty gay.
A very bad gay.
Bad.
Yeah.
Lexi, I was going to ask, because I'm also a horror nut, what are there any, like, you know, pieces of media that stick out to you that, like, you really enjoy?
And I think I'm more of, like, I will finesse the horror thing and say I'm way more of, like, a thriller, a psychological horror person. Sure. I love the idea of, like, someone writing how people's minds work. And or even that idea, there was always that meme of like, I think it was Tumblr, Twitter, who cares? But it was like something that was pictured and then like resent out a bunch of times. But it's like, oh, someone should write a horror movie where like everyone makes the right decisions and no matter what, they still die or something. Like, that's really what's scary. And I'm like, that's the definition of thriller. Like, everyone's still making very logical decisions and bad things happen anyway.
That's like Rosemary's Baby.
It's
She calls the police. Yes, she tries everything
she
can.
That's a great example.
Yes.
And no one's listening.
Yeah. Anything anything in the realm of like Get Out, anything in the realm of Midnight Mass is one that's like
I love that show.
God, I love that show. Anything Mike Flanagan, honestly, truly.
Yeah.
There was this series called Slasher that's on Netflix. And I think it's actually on the like it's there at like 5 seasons now, but the original idea, the original setup was that there was a girl who her parents were killed by a slasher who like was jealous. Like it was a friend of theirs that was jealous of their life. And she, you know, like he kind of like forcibly removes her as a baby. It's a whole thing. It's kind of gross. It's bad. But she just decides to move back home and live in the house because, you know, free house.
I guess.
It's just like this
housing market's crazy.
Exactly.
Well.
It's like she moves back with her. That's disgusting. That's the real horror movie. It's
exactly.
Housing.
That's the true
it
horror.
Truly is.
The 2008 housing crisis is the birth of the true horror. The real monster are the banks.
The houses, they're so getting more expensive. The bubble is going to pop. she like moves back home and it was just this wonderful slow burning a person dies every so I guess it's not slow burning but a person dies every single episode according to a like the seven deadly sins and
I love that.
It was wonderful in the sense of like you don't know what they did until after they die and then it walks
like
through why they just yeah, exactly like Seven. And it's like this slow, like you figure out what their life was in this town and why they deserved to die for this the sin that they do. Like, and it's gruesome and create like has very creative kills, I guess. And every single season after that, like at the end of that, you realize like the main character went to this summer camp. So then the next season is like you go to the summer camp and it's a bunch of camp counselors who accidentally killed a counselor and buried the body and they're building a tennis court like over it. So they have to go back and move it. And it's like they're staying in this camp and it's winter. They can't move around anywhere without like freezing to death. And each of them start getting picked off. And it's like very creative in how they kill people and how they deliver the story. And it's like stuff anything like that where you're following specific people and it's not like this faceless I don't know, a person with no personality that just gets killed. It's like no, we have to hear the monologue a little bit about their life. I want to know the monologue first and then we dive into things.
Like so like I am a big fan of like the silly like Friday the 13th like oh this teenager is just like here to bang and then
sex is bad kid then, sex is bad
sex is bad and it's immoral and you deserve to die for having sex and that's all we know about you.
Sure
yes
be,
yeah
shows,
no
always they always do that
yeah yeah Oh, no, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, it sounds like a sort of like a post-postmodernist take on like a lot of horror tropes. Because as you're describing, it's like, oh, that sounds like Seven. Oh, that sounds like Friday the 13th. They have to go back to camp, Camp Crystal Lake. I was supposed to say Camp Green Lake. Very different franchise. but they have to go back to Camp Crystal Lake. It's like that. It's yeah, it sounds like it's taking all of that, but being like, but what if we did it creatively?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. That's cool.
It's mm-hmm. wonderful. And I think I like those things more because I think with movies like Friday the 13th and other movies, like, they're very fun to watch and I get a thrill from watching them. Like, I think they're so fun and funny, but I think there's not a lot to like dive in on when you like try to look at it with like a critical eye. Like, I think a lot of people have, but I think like once you get to these criticisms of those movies or things that feel like they're in dialogue with those movies, you get to a place where you're like, oh, I can actually watch that movie with a little bit more light, actually, now that I've seen this other movie that did that and explained why it was like why that was such an effective way to go about things. And then come back to this movie and be like, oh, that was a conversation. That was a beautiful conversation I just had. Like, whoa. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so
that's so cool.
Go ahead, Liv.
I was just gonna say, like, on if anyone's like not a fan of horror and you're like, why are they so excited about the kills in movies? Well, look, sometimes people are really creative with how they murder a person in a horror film, and also sometimes they use practical effects and it looks really cool and stuff like that. And if you want to know more about what makes things in films look good when it's a kill, I suggest taking a look at Dead Meat Kill Count, which is a YouTube channel. Yeah, the channel is called Dead Meat, and they count all the kills in a bunch of horror films, and it's really, really fun. So
it's like fairly symbolic. Like, it can be very, very symbolic, rather than it just being like we keep coming back to religious undertones, but there's a reason that people do the like dying on a cross motif a lot, because it represents something symbolically and it brings something to the allegory of how the person dies and what they might represent, especially if whether they were the opposite, like if there was someone who was like air quotes unholy or not a saint and they die that way, it represents something different than if it is the person who's like the innocent person who always cared about other people and wanted the best for other people and they die that way. It's exactly it's establishing you saw them in the correct light. So killing them creatively is like such a beautiful craft, and then doing it in I mean, when it comes to like D&D, you kind of have to do the same thing. Like, you can't just kill someone needlessly. You have to think about symbolically what would they bring to the last point of their life, and what would this cinematically look like for the last for their last breath to be symbolic of everything they've lived before now. It's when you, interesting to study.
Are you talking about NPCs or PCs or both?
Both. I think NPCs sometimes have this like weird space where you can throw them under the like under the wheels and it just not matter, and the goal is to just like however it happens, we're just trying to get the players to care. But I think that sometimes, especially when players are attached to them, you can bring such a level of like respect to a character by giving them a death that I don't know, it respects them in that sense. PCs, obviously, I think every PC deserves like you deserve some sort of death that represents your life. Even if it is
a monumental death.
Exactly. And it's like interesting because we can create that experience visually, like in how you actually kill the person, or in what we get to do, which is stretch out of like that eidetic moment of like stretching out a moment with words and making something that might last a second last an entire session, you know? And it's wonderful that we have options and ways to do that. But like, both ways.
How can you give us an example of like either something that you've done in a game or just a hypothetical that like would embody this point, just for people listening and also for me, because I'm really interested. This is awesome.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, I thought about like this is this is interesting. I have definitely thought about ways that I would kill my players, not even kill, but I guess to kill is the action of like actually getting rid of their lives. I more so think about their death, like what I would include in their montage, or like what's the last thing I would say to them, or have someone else say to them. So I think that a lot of the times, I don't have a specific example because I haven't had to kill any players yet, but
But also you're like, what if I did?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think that a way this has popped up is, even outside of death, using it with like memories and flashbacks, it's the same exact mechanic of being like, what matters to you the most? And let me pull on this and make this matter. I use it a lot in Strix U, where it's like, you see yourself in a mirror, describe what you look like. And then me taking over that and talking to that person and saying exactly what their character and maybe the person needs to hear exactly in that moment. And it's just like impossible to, if you've never studied death or never, not even studied, if you've never experienced like grief or never like thought about how others might feel and thought about what other people might value, then it's really hard to pull those moments out of your ass. Like, it's really hard to be like, let me make a moment that matters to people, even though I've never thought about another person in my life. But
it takes a lot of empathy.
Exactly. You know? It's the same skill that's used with making flashbacks, making memories, making villain monologues. It's like, you know what's going to cut to your players and what's going to make that person lunge with the knife. Using that same exact thing with death and being like, okay, what's the thing that this person, like, who would they want to see in their final moment? If it's that time stretching where we're actually talking to the player as they die, or showing like a flashback, or giving the other PCs a chance to talk to them while it's happening, that's wonderful. But then also past it, it's like, okay, anyone can die from a power word kill. Anyone can die from a meteor swarm that gets cast and it takes out almost everyone, but this one character, like the wizard, is just out, down for the count. Thinking about like this meteor swarm and what it might mean to them to be like a spellcaster to be taken out by a spell, and like, how does this work with their background and like how they even study and what this might mean? Did they ever want to, did they ever think they could die by the hand of magic because they were so powerful? Like questions like that. It's all important. Yeah.
Sort of like, I feel like there's a lot of anime influence, right?
Yes.
In what you're describing. Because anime is the one that, like when you're talking about before they die, I have to give my monologue. That's like, if you watch something like Demon Slayer, which I don't think is like the greatest anime in the world, but it is, it's got some of the best animation in the world.
And the best character art, I just gotta say, their outfits go hard. Every single one of their outfits, all of designs.
I do. Especially when you get to like the Hashiras and you start getting like the really wild outfits and stuff. Yeah, that's very cool. But that's one of the hallmarks of that show, is that every single one of the villains, they always have like some extensive, like, but this is why you should actually feel bad for me. Like before.
I do love that.
Yeah.
Yes. I do love that.
It's like exactly that.
I was all alone and sad, and then I got bit by a spider, and the spider turned me into a demon, and then I made other spider demons. This is, I don't think that's in the show.
I would never be alone again.
Like, yeah, there are spider demons, but I don't remember what happened. Or like, I loved to play music. Yeah, I wanted to play music, and no one ever liked my music, so I became a demon. And now I just
And then I killed a bunch of people, and that's not so bad, because I had a bad time, so you should be fine.
Yeah, now I make music as a demon, and it's good if you don't like it, because it's going to kill you. But
that's
Yeah.
When you get the chance to zoom in on people, I think I'm of the belief in the philosophy that if you truly know someone, you can't hate them. And I think like, obviously there are disgusting, atrocious things people can do in this life that don't deserve the gift of love and the grace of love. And just, I don't know. I'm not against like, I don't even know what I'm trying to say here. I think what I'm saying is like there's there is if you zoom in on anyone's life enough, or even just ask one critical question, and you like you can see the why of what they're doing very clearly. And if you see the why, can you truly hate someone? Can you truly want their death? Can you truly, you know, any of that kind of stuff? So I think especially in like, my friend is about to run Curse of Strahd for me, and I am so excited. I've never read the book because I'm like, I'm saving this. I read every other book, and I just run the campaigns if I really am super interested in what they're like. I would just run one. Curse of Strahd, I've left alone because I'm like, I want to be scared. I want someone like I trust to run this for me. And she's running it, and I'm so excited. But something we've literally chatted about is how do you make death matter in a world that's supposed to be like hopeless? Especially because I believe that you should stretch out that moment and that you should give people the moment to matter, NPCs, PCs alike. So I think in movies, you don't really get that. Like someone just like if they die on screen or like Man of Steel, like there are thousands of people that died in Man of Steel. We will never know their stories unless they want, unless later somehow DC wants to turn them into a superhero. Like the only ones who get stories are the special ones. And it's like, that's not how real life works. And that's not the philosophy I bring to my games either. Like,
it's not Superman. Yeah.
It's
either.
Like the little things that like really make things matter.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I think that bringing a sense of, I guess, honor, rather to like honor the fact that they were a person. And I think being a person matters. And I think that like, and recognizing that. So even if we say what we think of this person is that they were terrible, something like, I know it got adapted into a movie. I have not seen the movie, but I know the book. I read the comic. Also written, I think, by a guy from Ohio, called My Friend Dahmer, which is about Jeffrey Dahmer as a teenager.
Oh, yeah.
When he was and the guy was in high school with him and they were friends. And the book unequivocally condemns the choices that Dahmer eventually made as an adult. But what it's essentially showing is this is what he was like when he was younger. And it like explicitly says multiple times, none of this justifies anything that came later. But at the same time, there's something very interesting about the story of a young man who's in like a repressive environment with a difficult home life, who develops drinking problems, is gay in a society that won't accept that, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then also seeing like what that was like for his classmates to just see him as, oh yeah, he's that funny kid who does weird voices and stuff. And yeah. And like, I think that you may still hate Jeffrey Dahmer. I don't think I think you're justified for doing it. Like, I don't think you're wrong for being like this guy.
Pretty justified.
But at the same time, I agree. Like it does bring a different feel to be like, oh, he was an actual person. And even it's almost scarier to realize that a real person chose to do these things as opposed to just like a mindless creature or monster.
Yep.
Oh, for sure. Like, yeah, real people are scarier than any like imaginary monster you could make up, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Big time.
I did want to ask you, how did you get in? Because I know that you are really into Magic the Gathering, but also into TTRPGs. And we've gotten as far.
Wait, hang on. Sorry. I'm so sorry. Lexi, you're into Magic? I had no idea about this. Oh my God.
Yo, Lexi's Lexi's in Magic now. Y'all saw that Eowyn card. Like, that literally is just.
I've been planning because I just got the silver hair and I'm like, okay, next, I've already bought like the packs of hair that I need to do the blonde. Cause I'm like, I'm just going to commit for a whole month or 2 months and just do the full blonde so I can do an Eowyn cosplay. Cause I'm like, it's gotta happen.
Oh, so cool. Sorry. Yes. Jeremy, I got really excited.
No, I was just going to say, how did we get the transition from like, cause we got as far as screenplays. Mm-hmm. How did we then get into TTRPGs and such?
Yeah, I mean, I get to college and break out of my shell, and eventually it's one of those things where I had heard about D&D. I had actually heard about it during high school and had asked someone to join their game during high school, but he was like, oh, well, we're super late in a campaign. I don't know if we could like add in someone. So I thought all D&D was done. I was like, oh, all D&D is shut down, I guess. Like, I just didn't think anybody else was playing. I was like, okay, cool, nothing. And if I would have just understood, I could have probably just held out and been in another campaign then. But it took getting to college. And when I got to college, I was in a Skype campaign of Curse of Strahd. I didn't realize it was Curse of Strahd at the time. But my friend had invited me because her twin brother was like, I want to run this game. It's horror. We'll pitch in money for Curse of Strahd, like for the book. We bought the book and then he started running it for us. That was the first... Like,
this HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there, and you know what? You can update it with an app, so every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt. Mm-hmm. So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective, unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Committed character sheet I had made. Now, I do have to say, I played D&D before that, and the D&D before that was this game where, like, none of us, like, I need to start sending out this character sheet. My friend, like, my best friend who's in all my games now, where we started with D&D is absolutely hilarious because we didn't understand a character sheet. So, like, under, like, it's like, you know, strength, con, dex, whatever, we just wrote, like, check, as in, like, yes, I have
yes,
intelligence.
I have constitution.
I have constitution. I had no idea what was going on. We were making everything up. It's like, what weapons do you have? We're like, we have to make this up? And, like, writing stuff down.
What weapons do you have? Yes.
I have a gun. Yeah.
Like, yes, no, weapons. Yeah. She played this character called Rash Ketchum, which was actually like a kid whose pet rat, Rikachu, was a crime boss. Oh, and she was like, oh, he's an old god and a crime boss. So yes, he has intelligence. Like, this character sheet is terrible to look at now. So we're like, oh god, that's not how you do it.
A great idea for a warlock, though.
Yes, absolutely. I don't think we even, like, I was a bard, but I don't think we really had a lot of classes or anything. We played that once, and then it was just, like, way too much. So this other Curse of Strahd time, I count it as, like, another restart because I actually understood the character sheet. Like, I went and watched videos on how it worked. I bought the player's manual, and then we played one session, and immediately I was like, and I think that was my the summer between sophomore and junior year. I bought the, or no, junior and senior year. That's what it was. Junior and senior year. Mm-hmm. Played the first game. Senior year, I bought the DM's guide and was like, I'm going to do this. Like, we played one session and I was like, I want to do this. I can't imagine, like, I can't find anybody else to play with. And I want to make worlds. Like, I love writing. Like, this seems perfect. And immediately, like, dove into building a world. And so I kind of made that transition by, like, playing once and then turning around and being like, oh, this is what it could be like. Like, I could be.
I could make this.
Yeah,
good.
I could tell the story.
We can put numbers in these spots.
Me? Whoa! I was like immediately intrigued, and started working on my first world, which I think I've talked about this before, but like it's like a Disney inspired world where it, like, I didn't show anybody the map until they asked for it, till they got one from, like, Princess Rapunzel or something. Or not Princess Rapunzel, but her mom. They were all in the search for Rapunzel. Mm-hmm. They all played. Like, I literally have the minis painted. I should go get them and show you. But they were Kronk, Jim Hawkins.
Amazing.
From Treasure Planet, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, Treasure Planet. And then Kida from Atlantis. I had those three players. And
very nice.
It was so much fun, but...
From like the more obscure, well, not obscure, but like the non-mainstream, but some of the most beloved, like smaller movies.
Exactly. Yeah, it was beloved. Wonderful. Yeah. And it was one of those things where, like, I learned so much in that first campaign because I was just completely, I don't know, I was railroading everyone so much. and also had no idea what the structure of an adventure looked like. I wasn't watching Critical Role. I wasn't watching anything at that point. So I was just like hoping for the best. So we would play and we had a lot of stupid, goofy fun times, but it just got so oppressive because at that point in time, I didn't realize the difference between playing a character that people know and love and making up your own character and the pressure of being like, well, I really want to open this door, but my character wouldn't interact. Like, Princess Kida would never interact with something haunted if she knew it was haunted. Like,
yeah.
Absolutely would not do that. And so it was just like very limiting for the players. Like, they couldn't have fun. They couldn't do things that they wanted to do because they were holding to the idea of these already existing characters. But the map, like, I didn't give it to them until they asked for it. They finally got it, and it was like a map of the Mickey head that I had made and like put all my cities on and stuff. Like, I worked really hard to make it like look like actual land.
they were on a hidden Mickey the whole time.
Exactly. Hidden Mickey found. It was so fun. And that was like, like I said, that was going into senior year. Senior year hits and we're playing D&D a lot more often. But I think it was January of 2020 that we were chilling. We had taken a break because I was like, this Disney thing is like not really hitting right. I don't know what it is. Took a break, tried to play a couple more times. COVID hit. So then we started playing in a new world, like started just doing something different. But that was all like COVID hitting and then me going all in on D&D and other tabletop games was all at the same time. Very much all at the same time. Yeah.
It's all right. Wild.
Yeah. Hell of
a Yeah. And so did that then, like, because you now have your own D&D show that you are the DM of. Like, how did we go from there then to Strix U?
Oh, it's honestly the work of like my amazing mentor, Jess, and seeing people in this space and like being completely irreversibly myself on the internet, because I get very excited about people. I get very excited about things. I wish that I could say that that is an act and I turn it off and I sit down in my like little apartment and I don't, you know, I interact with people. And when I say LOL, I'm not actually laughing or whatever, but like truly people and their capacity to come up with things and create excites me. So what happened was that I was doing my home games and the first thing that happened was I made a Twitter for Black Girl Mage and I worked with my mentor to like figure out what I wanted to do. And then tweeted the first show idea I had, which was like a Schitt's Creek campaign where it's like elves who are like old and like they've always lived in this mansion and always had their money, who get completely, everything gets repossessed and they get kicked out and have to live in a town that they owned and start going on adventures and doing stuff to get their money back. Started tweeting about that and having fun with the idea of like all these different shows I could make, but people just started interacting with me. And then I just started guesting on shows. And my mentor was like, okay, you need to learn how to be a player, like performing as a player, performing as a GM, doing both GM and producing at the same time, like to learn how to do that and production. Like you need to learn all four of these things in order to like figure out where you want to end out. And I really, really just loved like, I loved performing with people in a professional capacity that allowed me to flex like acting skills. And the GMing live was just something I found electric. So ever since then, it's just kind of been championing my friends' projects, being a part of my friends' projects, and then watching the space enough and taking the data that I was gathering of just like, whoa, like people really love this. Like, how does that work? And bringing that back and talking to my mentor and talking to my friends about it and experiencing the highs and lows of high school football when it comes to the AP space. And then developing Strix U and being like, okay, I'm ready to do it. This is gonna be my thing.
Amazing.
I had a whole cast. I was like, these are people that I wish could be on there, and I messaged every single person and all of them said yes. So like,
yes,
that's fantastic.
A cast of six. It just came together so wild. It was wild.
Amazing.
So what has it been like producing your own show and releasing it? How many seasons have you done at this point?
So we've done the prequel season, which was 4 episodes, and we actually just finished season one, like recording season one. We're and I'm going through and editing things and we're trying to get it ready to let go. I'm hoping by my birthday, which is like August 2nd-ish. So we'll see. But the idea, it's been mind-blowing. It doesn't make any sense. It feels like I'm making a movie. Like, truly feels like I'm making a movie, mainly because we're pre-recording. On top of pre-recording, I'm composing music for it and finding music. I'm adding sound effects. I'm editing everything in. Like, we were talking about Riverside. Like, what we did literally was everyone records separately. Mm-hmm. I bring everyone's video into Premiere, watch through the whole thing once, and then watch through and make notes of, like, where I want sound things to happen. And then last, the prequel was super involved, where I was like editing every single thing and changing the layout dynamically according to who was talking in conversation. It was very, very polished and very put together. It almost killed me. Like,
That is a lot. Like, I mean, even the idea of like doing a first pass and then going through and deciding where to put stuff. I have to do it like on the fly. Yeah. Otherwise my brain will shut down.
Me too. I do audio editing for the Quantum Reactor, and I considered doing that once. And then I was like, I could not do that. I could not just listen to this raw entirely and then force myself to go back. I just got to do it as I go. Yeah. So that's incredible dedication, because I think the advantage of the way that you do it is you get to see the shape of the thing before you then start going in and changing things.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like, I have notebooks full of just like me writing down timestamps of like, okay, this layout with this person or these two people or these four people from this to this timestamp, and then from that ending timestamp to the next one. And it's like seconds long of like stitching in people and cutting in people and doing what a lot of editors for films do, which is like feeling out the thing and saying, okay, I want to punch in on like this person had a really good reaction. Yep. Let me use that here.
Yeah.
And kind of doing that filmmaker thing. It was wonderful. And I think it's been very validating. I get to just laugh at everyone all the time. I get to like laugh at and with everyone all the time. Anytime there's like a break, I just start laughing. It's so hard because I'm sitting in a room like hunched over. Or if there's two characters flirting, I like pause it and have to do the thing where I get up and like walk away. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm fanning myself. I'm like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And then I sit back down. I'm like, okay, we're good. I can keep going now. But it's like watching The Office where you're like, you're sitting and watching and then Michael does something bad and you have to pause it and stand up and walk.
Yeah, it's like, oh God.
It's like you're a fan, but you get to be a fan of the thing that you're helping to make.
Exactly. It's such a good, like a good feeling. I think if I didn't like it, if I didn't love it, honestly, it would be very hard for me to sit through and do the same exact thing. I think I can find love for just about everything. It's easier for me because I've helped other people with their shows. I've composed things for other people's shows, and that requires kind of watching through or listening through or getting a vibe and a tone. But it's exactly what you said, being a fan of your own thing and like getting to just experience it over and over and over, which to some people is hell, but to me so far has been heaven.
Well, I think also for GMing, that's incredibly useful. Being a fan of your players and the stuff that you all are creating together, I think brings such a level of excitement. And I think like playing with GMs who feel like they really, like they're very invested in your story is like, it's so nice because the GM's like, man, like getting all excited when you do the stuff. I feel like it makes the whole, like, because obviously GMs are playing too. And I think it makes, I think that having somebody, having the person with the loudest voice at the table be a fan of what everyone else is doing, I think really elevates the energy of a game.
I mean, that is you as a GM, by the way, Jeremy. Yes. Like, you're, like, somebody will do something wild and you'll be like, yeah, fucking, let's fucking go. Like, it's great.
Amazing. I can't help it. The hype is real. Like when people will make moves and I'll be like,
Yeah,
no.
It's great.
There was a thing that I saw. I did at Convergence recently. Shout out to Quincy's Tavern. I was at Convergence, an event that he put on. And in one of my games, there was, it actually ties in with a story with what you were talking about earlier with the deaths. and character deaths being meaningful. Basically, the general plot was that the characters had been transported back in time to key historical events and had been at a battle, like this big battle that was that they'd seen depicted on a tapestry, and they're like, whoa! But they were now there, and they had fought the leader of the opposing side, and because we had limited time, I basically had them just roll opposed battle checks to see which side of one they lost. And they lost by so much that I basically gave them the choice that either two of you die or one of you dies and two of you are maimed. And they chose that option. And so we had a whole season. We had a whole scene where that character had been like run through with these claws and had like a moment to say goodbye to everybody. But in his backstory, he couldn't remember how old he was or really much about his past. He just remembers waking up. It's almost like a Rip Van Winkle thing. Like he just woke up one day, but doesn't remember anything in contrast to Rip, and just wandered around befriending people. And so he died. And then eventually they got to the end of the war. They had gotten a hold of like an herb that was like a healing herb, but would also like cause you to pass out and all this stuff. And they arrived at the end of the war at like this little obscure church and discovered that character as a little kid. The leader of the opposing side had run away and was hiding out in this church. And because that character's family, like, sort of operated that church, they had like gone in there thinking that it's like, oh, well, time to get set up. And he was in there and he can't have these people here. So he killed that dude's entire family. There was a moment where like they could decide to give him the herb to basically, which would have caused him to fall asleep and forget everything. Mm-hmm. And it would have basically closed the loop where it's like, oh, the reason he didn't remember everything is because you guys erased his memory because he was so traumatized from what he saw. And everybody was sitting there like, oh, and one of the players realized this and she had the stuff and she was like, I dump it out on the ground. And it was like, oh! Like everybody was like, whoa, this is wild. And completely created a new timeline where he now remembered everything. The whole direction of the war had changed. The nation no longer existed. Like all of these different and like they. Yeah, it was really. But it's the like those. I don't know. I just get hyped. Like that story in and of itself is like, yo, that's so sick that they did that.
It's really fun. And I think that there's been this like, archetype of GMs and DMs who like are against players, like are against and want to specifically like defy everything their players do. And I think you lose out on so much because you get the chance to just like, watch something rad happen. Like for every I think that there's like definitely merit to being like, hey, like let's not
maybe we dial it back a little bit, you know.
We're gonna dial it back. Like truly I listen to a lot of NADPOD and just this is not Looney Tunes. Like we're not doing that. You can absolutely call my warriors birds, but like if it gets any further than that, I'm shutting it down.
It's like Murph has them all tethered to the ground and somehow he has to like pull them in, like pull them in just a little bit closer to the earth.
I imagine it's like, you know, like you see like a dad with like kids and they're all on like little tether things and then he's like, no everyone please.
The dad reflexes, like the kid starts to run into the street, he just yoinks them back with the leash.
Like,
but in the best
the
way,
YouTube videos that are just like specifically compilations of dad saves where it's like a kid that like accidentally is gonna fall down the stairs and the dad like grabs him out of midair, like stuff like that. Those compilations are just like Murph's DMing, like as a whole. But like truly, like that's the definition of it. Like you can be a guardian of the rules, but you can also be a champion of the players, because players come up with really fun things that you get to just sit back and be like, whoa, I'm watching this like as a fan. Like
yeah.
An example of this that I really enjoy. So I've been watching Never After on Dimension 20. Yes. So good. I've just finished it.
Screaming, crying.
I know for real. It's very, very good. If you haven't watched it, I highly recommend it. Like good shit.
Yeah.
But I won't give anything particularly away. But literally, somebody was like, "I have a rocket. Can I give this bird the rocket so the bird can fire off the rocket?" And then Brennan was just like initially like, "Oh my fucking god," and then was like, just put on a voice for the bird, just like, "I did two tours and like I've been in wars and yep. I've done this and like everything, and I've seen some shit and like did turn this bird into a whole ass character." And it was just the funniest thing, and just like just taking what the players do and running with it and making it just like making a silly idea be just a bunch of fun. It's great. I love it when GMs
highly recommend. I've mm-hmm. never lost that way, if that makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. I've lost in other ways where the actual table experience, like, I think a lot of DMs are very focused, and not even a lot of DMs, but people that advise DMs to, like, go against their players in that way, they're very focused on losing, mm-hmm. and they're mm-hmm. losing a game that they want to win when there's no win condition. When you could be cultivating an experience at your table that doesn't make you feel like you're losing in the first place. Like, I play D&D with 6 people. We're all professionals. And this show will go and has gone a certain way. And it's like, I haven't lost because my villain got beat up, or I didn't lose mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. I rolled like crap. I didn't lose because I wanted to do the villain monologue. And like, you can watch this happen over and over and over. Like, first episode of Strixhew, I'm like, you've all been gathered here as the top 13 students. And they're like, "Oh, are you really going to do this right? Are you sure? Did you want to talk? Did you want to talk? I'm sorry." Like, they just do it to me all the time. If I was anyone else, I would feel like it is a dunk. But you can see me just sitting there like, this is so funny. This is hilarious.
I hate and love this at the same time. How dare you do this to
me?
It's
like, yeah. I'm going to win even in those moments where other people would find that as like, "You're being disrespectful to my villain," because I've worked hard to create a table where I never lose.
Mm-hmm. Liv did
That's so poetic.
Liv did that in Curse the Spider Queen with the Monarch Tijani, when they were like, "This is our most sacred area," and it's like the well, and you were like, "The well." Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Like, get out.
No, you got so that really took me aback though, because like the character in the game was like actually forced my character out of the room and didn't give me of the lore, and forced Juju to just wait outside. And I was starting to plot ways like, "I'm gonna turn into a spider, I'm gonna wild shape into a spider and sneak back in, I'm gonna get in there."
Oh, that was so funny. And then you did it again.
I did it again.
Not 2 times. I did.
Great.
staring them straight in the eyes.
Oh,
eye.
Gosh.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, it's good stuff. But yes, I'm right there with you, Lexi. Like the investing in letting your players have fun and trying to say yes and rather than constantly saying no. Mm-hmm. Like, even letting them get a win does not have to be unequivocal. Like, you can make it so that there are no truly unequivocal wins. Maybe they defeated the villain, but okay, maybe in defeating the villain, they caused someone else that they care about to be harmed. Like, the villain had secret plans that, because they never actually said their speech, the secret plans just went off. I set it all up to go without me, and you just attacked me. I had a whole thing, like, if I die, there's a fail safe, and it went off, and you killed me, or it could even be maybe the villain, if we're trying to humanize people, maybe the villain had family. Maybe it's one of those situations like where the villain had family who thought they were a good person and did not realize all this stuff and is now like, "These people killed my beloved parent or sibling."
Yes, that sort of thing. Kill villain. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What happens? Yeah. There's so many. Yeah. Like, Vivica A. Fox's daughter.
Yes.
Comes back. Yeah.
This, I will have it known to all of the 3 Black Halfling fans and everyone in all of everywhere that I said that Zendaya should come back as her daughter when I first watched the movie, which was in 2014, I don't want to hear from any, like, I saw a whispering that they're making another Kill Bill movie with Zendaya. And it was like, I think it was definitely not actually happening. I feel like it was a fandom thing that they're like, oh, Zendaya is rumored to come back. She's been working with Uma Thurman. And I definitely haven't heard anything since. But when it first came out, I was like, if someone stole my idea, I will kill them. Like, just the idea of like literally doing another set of movies that is her coming back and taking out, getting to Uma, but like having to go through
like her daughter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But like, she's justified. So it's like a Killmonger thing where we have to think about like who gets justice in that situation. Who she does deserve a life for a life. Like, even though her mom did something terrible, there is justice to be dealt here. oh gosh, it would be so compelling.
I haven't seen Kill Bill, which is wild, I know. Was Zendaya in Kill Bill? Okay, I was going to say.
It's like the first,
was she alive?
The first 12, 14 minutes of this movie is Uma Thurman knocking on a door in the middle of suburbia, Vivica A. Fox swinging open. They get into it. Like, I'm talking, slam each other on the glass tables. Like,
no words exchanged. Immediate fists. No words.
Pulling out knives. Right. They're bleeding. It's a wonderful sequence. Like, literally bleeding. Mm-hmm. It kind of defies everything about, like, I mean, how people assume women would fight, air quotes, women would fight, whatever. It's like a very bloody, earth-shattering fight where they're like literally both tired, like panting, as a yellow school bus pulls up in the distance and her daughter gets off the school bus and they're like knives up, staring at each other, like will not break eye contact. And then Vivica A. Fox, she glances at the door and sees the girl getting off the bus and she's like, we have to stop this for my baby, like, please. And the second that the door opens, the two of them immediately prop up, put the knives and the broken glass behind their mouth. And it's just like,
visibly bleeding, like, hey, honey, as the dog comes in.
And she's like, is everything okay? That's she's so funny. It's fine. It's just my new friend. This is my new friend. Whatever. They continue. She's like, they send her to her room and the two of them just talk in their kitchen. And then the fight continues and she ends up killing spoilers for Kill Bill, but like she ends up she ends up killing Vivica Fox and then the daughter comes in
as
she's like wiping the blood off of her knife and she's like, if you want to come back and get justice, I'll understand, but your mom did like bad things and so like you'll know where to find me if you ever want your justice the way I want mine.
I'm fully on board with this.
Yeah,
I'm on so rad.
Yeah,
absolutely. So rad.
Super
Zendaya,
cool.
Let's do this.
so cute. Oh, it would be so cool.
I was gonna say, Lexi. So there is something that we do ask everyone on the show that we're very excited to ask you, and it is a tale from the table. Usually Jasper poses this question, but Jasper's not here, and I'm gonna give it to you.
So grab the reins, Liv.
I'm gonna do it. Hi. But yeah, so basically it can be whether you've been like GMing or whether you've been a player and just like something like really interesting or really cool or what, just like a memorable story that you'd like to tell us about just from a game.
Ooh, I have a lot. Like
all of them.
Oh
now,
gosh.
Please. Yes, good.
Can I do like a two-parter? So I'll do a little bit of one because it's like not something that is like a specific tale, but it's so funny and I cannot stop thinking about it. During the prequel season of Strixhew, one of the players, like, I'm starting this off at a house party, and so it's literally like almost like a camera that is doing one shot through a mansion, going through and seeing every single person and
introducing the characters.
Exactly.
I love that.
And it got to one character, their name is Austin, but their character's name is Lamar. And this is like a well-known thing now. Like, people have made a hashtag out of it because basically we cut to Lamar and Lamar has this friend that's been showing up and her name is Nora. And this is from Strixhaven lore. So if you've ever, you know, the NPC Nora, the two of them, I fully didn't tell anyone how I was going to start this, but I was like, okay, this has got to be sad. This is going to be so sad because Austin told me that, like, me and Nora had a thing freshman year, but now I'm like trying to move away from it. Ooh. And so we literally started off with a breakup, and no one else freaking knew what was going on.
Oh, that's so juicy. I love so that.
The whole scene is just like me playing Nora and being like, oh, like, oh, it's so great. Like, it's so great to see you. Like, because you weren't texting me back, but like, it's okay. It's cool. It's fine. I'm so excited to see you now.
Oh, no.
And
no.
Lamar's just like, do you want to go in this other room and talk? And they do. And immediately Lamar's like, I just don't know. I don't know if we should keep doing this. But like, if you still want to come over, you totally can. And somehow it just was like the most rancid breakup. You can literally cut around to other people's faces. And I think I do with the editing. Everyone was not prepared. Everyone staring like just wide eyed at the camera. I was like, trying so hard not to break because it was just like one of those scenes no one expected it to happen immediately. Yeah. And then everyone just started using hashtag like justice for Nora after this moment. And I was like, that's a DM win of just like, yes. Everyone yeah, pities sure. my NPC. Thank you so much.
For sure.
That was, I cannot emphasize.
One intro though.
A breakup yeah. for an intro is perfect.
It really
so
is.
Wild. Yeah.
I was like, I gotta start using this more.
It's an immediate emotional hook. People are like, oh, yeah. No.
Just like, so who wants to be emotionally devastated at the start of the season this time? Anyone? Anyone? No? Yes?
No?
Mm-hmm. Any triggers? No?
Tell me who? Tell me who?
Breakup now.
Yes, it's yeah. true. I just feel like breakups are so rife for, like, everyone breaks up with people differently. So it's very interesting to be like, how are you going to do this?
Yeah. Ooh, gosh. It's very revealing as a concept. Just like, especially like, even if it's like your character doing it, it must say like a little bit about how you might do it.
Exactly. Exactly. It's definitely a personality. Like, I love anything in my game that's like, so how do you go about this? Let me tell me how you do this specifically. That tells me more about the person involved.
How the worst? How do you want to do this?
Yeah. Oh my god.
Matt can have all of the best ones. I am in charge of the worst ones, which
oh, that's
is
so brutal.
How do you want to break this person's
yes,
heart? How do you want to do
exactly.
that?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. How do you want to do it?
So what's the other part of the story?
Excellent.
The other one, it's like not even a part, it's just another game that I ran. Like, I've started doing this thing where if my players can't show up to a game, my IRL, like D&D friends, if they cannot show up to a game, I have four people in that game. I've started doing this fun little game that's set in a place of my world, inspired by Orion D. Black's, like we did a... It was supposed to be a campaign and it ended out not being, but it was a campaign in this world where like a portal opened up and people went in and it's like a huge mega dungeon. But if you get to the center, there's a wish spell and two people have completed it so far. And so a new dungeon opened up and now people are like, everyone's formed like guilds. Like there's the botanist guild, there's like the rogues guild, the fighters guild, and you are supposed to build a team and go in. It was so rad. It was like me, it was like Connie, it was like Gabe Hicks. It was, oh my God, it was so many people. It was so rad. And so I dropped that into my world. And so now I've had, if you can't show up, we do this secret little game. Nobody else, we're not allowed to talk about it outside of it. It's our little fight club.
Oh my God. Yeah, I was going to say it's fight club. It's a speakeasy of
exactly.
games.
Exactly.
Like yeah.
And last time they went to this like plains, like an icy tundra place where they were supposed to get rid of this fire or this ice dragon. And I have never had anything polymorphed before. It's my first polymorph.
Oh, ooh, against you?
Against me. I was like, I was going to ruin your life with this ice dragon really quick, but okay, cool.
No.
They turned him into a rabbit.
Oh no! Legendary resistances or nothing.
All no. out. I was like, cool. And so I started coming up with a voice for this rabbit, and I started playing him. And so I had done this thing. This is my infamous signature move, which is I give people things and forgot that I gave them the thing.
Yes.
So I gave them a key at the very beginning, and I was like, "You're gonna need this." I'm like the person that's giving them the quest. You're gonna need this. And halfway through, they're like, "What is this key for? We're in a tundra." And I was like, "What? I forgot about that." So they were like, they said to the ice dragon who turned into the rabbit, he's like, you know, like, it's really good to see you all. Like, I felt so angry for years. I don't know what is going on, but I'm happy to be so small. My anger feels so small. I feel like I should deal with that. And they automatically, like, they were like, do you know what this key does? And the most wretched thought I've ever had in my life, I was like, the rabbit turns around.
No!
Lifts the tail.
Lexi!
Oh, no.
Lexi, no!
His butt, his no. asshole just extends to a door. And he, I was like, throughout the whole thing, he's screaming, he's like,
just screaming bloody yes. murder.
And oh. They were like, how did the person who gave us the quest know this was going to happen? And the rabbit's like, you have to hurry. You must go. You got to go through. I cannot hold this for long. Like, please, it's hurting.
And like, the key, like, I can't. I have no time to answer the questions. Just go through. Just go. Don't worry about it.
Fly, you fools.
Just run into my ass. Get in there.
Exactly. Put the key in the door and walk through. And it was, they ended out in
the door. The ass.
The ass door.
Yes, the keyhole. They twist the key. They ended out in the first chamber. It's like really hard. Like once you go into this place, you have to trace your way back out. And they ended out in the first room of this mega dungeon. And the door like shut and they could just hear. Ah! And then it shut all the way. And when I terrible. Say we had like 30 minutes left of this session, we spent the last 30 minutes just laughing so hard.
Oh my God. I would cry, like, in so many ways, I would cry.
It had me in tears. I've never given into an improv thought faster.
Truly phenomenal GMing.
Oh,
truly
my goodness.
Amazing improv. Oh, fantastic stuff. I mean, if that doesn't convince you to go and check out Lexi's stuff, I don't know what will. I read up, you know?
Don't know. You know, I might just not be the person for you. If you don't like rabbits with assholes to other dimensions. Mentions.
You don't like the truth.
Narnia lies within the rabbit's tuchus.
There was no closet. The closet was a rabbit the whole time. Terrible.
Oh,
all doors are actually connected to rabbits. It's a piece of
it's
lore.
True. Mm-hmm.
Little known piece of lore. All rabbits have doors. Mm-hmm.
For every door your players encounter, you roll a D100 or a D1000, mm-hmm. which is like an extra hundreds die mm-hmm. on there. Mm-hmm. And if it lands on a 0 to 10, if you get a 0 to 10 on it, then it's a rabbit.
Then
yeah,
it's a rabbit's ass.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry to say it.
You walk through the door, and
it's
a rabbit's
in the
like,
handbook,
"Oh,
it's
finally! In the- oh!" You're in a new place.
I've been here for 25 years waiting for someone to. It's funny that it hurt so bad, but it didn't do enough damage for me to turn back into a dragon. So it's really been a
oh,
long
all
time.
Specifically, dragons.
It's kind of an awkward amount
have been
of
polymorphed into rabbits.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Gang, this is rules as written in the Dungeon Master's Guide. True. You look it up if you don't believe it.
Jeremy Crawford.
Please tell them. Please.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming, Lexi. Oh,
thank
my
you so much,
goodness.
Lexi. This has been fantastic. Yes. What a good
wow.
time.
Revolutionary.
Yeah. If you do end up checking out any of the Frank Peretti books, some of which are actually pretty decent. Again, yeah. I remember them being, this is not me endorsing Frank Peretti if he has a bunch of like really homophobic or otherwise regressive bad stuff in his books.
Very
it
bad.
Was a long time. I read them way over 10 years ago. So it's been a long, long time since I think I was a teenager. Maybe I was like 11, 12. So it's been like nearly 20 years since I've read these books. So
yeah, the likelihood is probably
yeah.
high,
so read them with your own peril if you do check them out.
Yes, for sure.
But,
proceed with peril.
Yeah. But Lexi, where can the folks find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Twitch under the same exact name, Black Girl Mage, where I am a dungeon master, a game master. I have a lot of thoughts, and I support a lot of my friends. A lot of the times, I'm just thinking about D&D and playing D&D. So if you want to know what I'm playing in next or doing, that's the best place to find me.
All right.
Very and nice.
Liv. Oh, and rather, before we go to Liv, where can people find Strix U?
Oh my goodness. So Twitter is the best way at first because on my page, you can see there's literally my pinned tweet is the StrixU trailer. So you can at least see that and see if it's your thing. It is very, I'm sorry, I composed the piece. So I'm like a little braggy about it, but like it is
oh,
like
yeah, please,
marching band music that is Oh, it's fucking baller. It's so good. It's probably like my favorite thing I've ever written. That. And I just turn
it
on.
Oh, is it like high school style, like marching
yes.
band?
Yes. Like so college, sick. University. Like,
yeah.
Oh, it's rad. And awesome. It's absolutely amazing. You can find the link to Strix U from that. It's also on YouTube under the same Black Girl Mage in a playlist that you can just watch through real
amazing.
Quick.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Convenience. Yeah. We love that.
Everyone go mm-hmm. check that out. Go do it.
Yeah.
This is an official endorsement. go Liv. Check that out. But Liv, where can people find you?
Jeremy Black Girl Mage Cobb.
Lexi, I will send you my email if you want to send me a PayPal. Yes. Single dollar, please.
Of course.
A single yeah. dollar.
Sending it.
The majority of which PayPal will take. but hi, yes, I'm Olivia. You can find me on Twitter at Does Dark Magic and every other social media, I think, at Olivia Does Dark Magic. You can also, if you just enjoy tabletop stuff, including board games and card games like Magic the Gathering, etc., you can find me on youtube.com/dicebreaker, where we do a bunch of videos all about tabletop, and it's a lot of fun. Also, speaking of YouTube, you should go to youtube.com/3blackhalflings and follow us there. Subscribe, because we've got some stuff on the way that's very exciting. I'm excited about it. That's me, right? That's all I do, isn't it?
Yeah. That's all you do.
I think that's all I do.
You do so much less.
That's me.
Yeah, why are you placing a limit on yourself?
Yeah.
You gotta reach to the ceiling. Know. What don't do you do yet? You know? Like, start
what,
there.
What don't I do? Yeah, exactly. I don't own a circus, and that's good, because, yeah. you know, a lot of them are bad,
yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're welcome. I'm doing it, Jeremy. Sorry.
It's absolutely
yes.
fine. On the note of moving away from circuses, hi, my name yes. is Jeremy Cobb. You can follow me on Twitter at Jeremy Cobb 1. That's Cobb with 2 B's and the number 1. You can also follow me on Instagram at The Cobbmeister. And you can follow this show on Twitter, yes. Instagram, Facebook, Grindr, etc. At 3, this is number 3, mm-hmm. Black Halflings.
Yep.
And you can also, if you enjoy all of this and you want to hear more behind-the-scenes stuff, bonus episodes, you want to hear episodes without ads, you can head over to the 3 Black Halflings Patreon. That's patreon.com/tbhalflings. Oh, and I forgot. I also stream these days. I don't just have social media. I also stream,
you
yeah. twitch.tv/casualquestlive. I've been streaming Fallout New Vegas on Tuesdays and Deus Ex Human Revolution on Thursdays.
Yeah.
A slight hook, I don't play shooters at all. So this is my first time playing either of these games.
Shooters are
yes, these
hard,
are the first first-person shooters I've ever played. They are at least ever intentionally played. I think I've played maybe one round of Call of Duty. Because a person asked me to, but I don't play shooters at all. I'm having a blast playing the games. But yes, please go follow Lexi, go check out Strix U, and we will see you all next time. So long, Shire folk.
So long.
Goodbye, Shire folk.
Goodbye, Shire.
That was a HeadGum Podcast. That was a HeadGum Podcast.